It's your time to Ed Up with America's leading higher education podcast network, the Ed Up Experience, where we make education your business. This is Ed Up Legal with your host, Patty Roberts. She's Dean at St. Mary's School of Law, and she's going to be leading conversations about legal education in today's world. Now let's hear from your host, Patty Roberts.
Hello, this is Patty Roberts from EdUp Legal, and I'm here with Leah Teague, Professor of Law and Director of the Business Law Program at Baylor University School of Law. And I'm so excited to have her with us because she is very involved in the Baylor Leadership Program, which is the leading legal education leadership program across the country. Now, Professor Teague, I noticed that you have been Associate Dean for almost 30 years, so this is a new transition for you into directing the Business Law Program. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey at Baylor and what this new role will entail?
Yes, thank you, Patty, first for your work. I'm so excited about what you're doing. You know where my heart is, and my heart is in helping our law schools produce law students who will go out there in the profession and honorably represent all of us as a profession as they influence not only their clients, but their circle of friends and family and within their communities. And that is part of what this transition for me is about. 30 years, goodness, that has been who I have been and identified with for 30 years. So this is a big shift. For me, it's a personal, important journey to be best used because as you and I have shared, we try to remind ourselves it's not about me, it's not about us. It's about the work that needs to be done. And at Baylor, there are two important efforts that I'm going to have the opportunity to focus on, and that will be our business law programs. We're well known as a litigation school. We're very proud of that national reputation, but the truth is we also do a phenomenal job of preparing our students for business and transactional positions as well. We've just not focused on marketing and providing more opportunities for our students. So that I will be focused on for this year. And then regardless of what I do for the rest of my years, leadership development and helping other law schools and helping the academy embrace the role that we have of preparing our students for those important roles as influencers, difference makers. We know they're going to hold those roles. We just need to be intentional about preparing our students for those roles. So I will always focus on those efforts as well. So thank you for inviting me and giving me this opportunity.
Well, it's very exciting when you see someone who has such a fantastic experience in legal education as you do, start over and change a role. And I can relate, you know, moving to a new place, at least for me, and taking over the deanship here. But for you to make that transition at the University and School of Law, where many generations of your family have graduated, I understand. And your yes. daughter also is a Baylor Law grad, isn't she?
She is. My youngest daughter went through Baylor and finished as a graduate of our JD MBA program. So she has a law degree and a MBA. And my other daughter has an MBA in healthcare administration and my son-in-law. And so, yes, 13 degrees from the Baylor University in my family in three generations. So, you know, you could say I do bleed green and gold without a doubt.
Well, your family's been keeping them in business for sure. So one of the reasons primarily I asked you to join us is because of the leadership development program. And I know that you've been instrumental in the annual symposium, that you co-teach the leadership development course, and you've just co-authored a new book, Fundamentals of Lawyer Leadership, with your colleagues, Professor Fraley and Rispoli, a book I will proudly say I'm using in my law and leadership course this semester and really loving it. So we'll talk a little bit about the book in a few minutes, but first, if you could just talk about the leadership development program at Baylor.
Yes, thank you. You know, we've actually created a team here at Baylor Law School that we're calling our leadership team. And two of my co-authors, we've added very recently, Patricia Wilson, who is has taken on the role as associate dean for the law school. And she was very helpful to us in creating this first edition. And she'll be joining us as an official co-author as we get to our second edition. So there's now the four of us, but quite honestly, we have many other colleagues at Baylor that are very supportive. When Stephen Rispoli, who is has been our assistant dean of student affairs, and quite honestly, he's a go-to person for many projects at Baylor. When he was a student, we began having conversations about the need for more leadership development for our students. And then when he joined our staff, he and I began this journey of looking to see what other law schools were doing with regard to leadership development. And to our shock and amazement, we found virtually nothing in legal education in terms of formal leadership development programs. It was about 2014, literally. We could only find a handful of professors that were in this space. Deborah Rohde was at the top of the list. You've already visited with Neil Hamilton. He was one of those. Don Polden at Santa Clara. Gary at Minnesota. Gary Jenkins, dear friend. There were just a handful of folks that we could find and a few others. And so we then decided, okay, we may have to look at business schools for models. So Stephen and I together worked for about a year, and we visited with professors, not at other law schools, but really some other leadership. The person who created the leadership development program at Richmond, he came from military and was instrumental in doing some military leadership programming. Howard Prince, he was at UT Austin at the time. We visited with him. So we really started from scratch, trying to figure out what did we think a leadership development course should look like for a law school? And then what should a leadership development program look like for a law school? And we created that, and our faculty was supportive. And in 2014, we began that program. About the same time, I had been introduced to Deborah Rohde through both of us working in the women's leadership development space in higher education, not in law school. That was sort of my side gig. I was doing this law school thing, and then secretly, almost kind of to my colleagues, I was working at kind of at a national level on women's leadership for women administrators in higher education. And through that work, I met Deborah Rohde. She and I began conversations about why we didn't have more leadership development in law schools. And those who know Deborah know that she's just an icon, was an icon and was part of the movement for professional development, professional responsibility as part of the professional development of law students. And then in women's leadership, she was well known nationally. So she and I began those conversations, and that led to the first meetings and then the creation of the section for leadership in the LLS, and then these annual symposiums have been a result of that. And so I'm so fortunate to know Deborah Rohde before her way too soon passing just this last year.
Well, it is very fortunate that Deborah was so involved in the development of your programming and that you all became close and became leaders in this effort. What an amazing legacy she has left on the Legal Academy. She certainly will be missed, but she was a trailblazer in this and is the foundation, I think, or built the foundation that we are all building on after her important work.
Absolutely.
So the The leadership program came to be in 2014. It sounds like you all surveyed and saw this wasn't going on. You went to business schools, as you indicated, to get some idea of what they were doing. And what does it look like? I mean, you know, I have a small course here. I know there are courses at a lot of law schools on law and leadership. Some of them taught by deans, others taught by professors, but it sounds to me like you have something much more robust with your program. So if I'm a student at Baylor, how would I avail myself of what you offer in leadership training?
You know, we started with our course because we were still learning. How do we do this? What are the topics that need to be important? And we've spent, a good 5 years now really trying to figure out what does that look like? How do we build leadership development for our law students? And then what we've done with that is to look at what we have determined is successful, what is important and relevant through our teaching of this leadership course. And we are now in the process of almost just picking the best elements of that and looking to see how can we infuse some of the best of that we've learned through our teaching of this, developing and teaching this course. How can we infuse that throughout our full program, starting with orientation, first year program, second and third year, all the way to as we walk them out the door, what pieces of this do we think are so important we need to find a way to deliver it to all of our students? And so we're not there yet, but that's at Baylor. That's where we're working. We're trying to figure out how do we infuse some of this training throughout the full 3 years. All of it really builds on this foundation of you have to start with leadership of self. So if we look at our textbook and the way we ended up structuring it, we start with leadership of self. In that, I'll be honest with you, I think the most critical components of that, and some of this we've started infusing into orientation and into some first year gatherings, looking at teaching them the concepts of grit, growth mindset, resilience. None of that is possible to have the grit and the growth mindset and the resilience that you need to succeed in law school and in the profession and life. Without understanding that feedback and failure are critical components to our growth, and that failure cannot be viewed as a negative. Sometimes it's hurtful, it's difficult, but it's a necessary part of the growth and the resilience that's necessary to get you to, you know, what your goals are, where you want to best have an impact in other people's lives. So the leadership of self becomes the foundation. So we're trying to introduce those concepts in orientation and then find ways to reinforce, build on those concepts throughout the 3 years of law school. So we'll go back to the book. Leadership of self is the foundation, and we really want to try to infuse those elements throughout the 3 years of our program. But in the leadership course, we then build on that and begin to work with them about how do you have leadership of others, which is really teamwork. How do you be part of an effective part of a team? How do you have influence? How do you then begin to lead others? And so there we talk about relationships, communication. Again, those are elements that should be part of our law school programming as well, and building throughout. You know, law school has a tendency to be viewed as very competitive, to be very individualistic. We need to change that because effective lawyers are contributing members to teams. And so, again, we're trying to find ways to build that into our law school programming. And then the last portion of our book focuses on truly beyond that, which also makes our students successful in the practice of law, leadership of self, leadership of others, that's necessary regardless of your professional pursuits. But the third component of our book focuses on, okay, now that you are working on yourself and how to have influence and get others to join you and to work effectively with others, what impact can you have in your community? Because historically, lawyers have been leaders in efforts both at the local level, the state level, and the national level, and internationally. So how do you begin to think about the impact that you want to make? So we talk about legacy. What legacy do you want to leave? And how do you then conduct yourself in order to set goals and then reach those goals in ways that will be the difference maker that probably brought you to law school? We know so many of our students, they say it, they tell us in their personal statements, they want to make a difference. So we need to do everything in our power to not let them forget that, which some of our students do in sort of the rough and tumble of law school. Sometimes they lose that sense of what brought them to law school for purposes of thinking about the practicalities and the stressors. Gosh, we need to help them, you know, find that again. So that's an important part of that. And I'll add to that, there's sort of two important themes that we try to integrate throughout our, not only our textbook, but throughout the messaging. You know, it's the importance of honor, integrity, being an ethical, honorable member of our noble profession, that which should be a noble profession, always was. We hope it will always continue to be. So we infuse the concept of ethics, honor, integrity throughout the book, but then we also focus a lot on wellness, which is also another very relevant topic in legal education currently. Because not only do we understand that you can't be as effective as you want to be if you yourself are not in a good place, but we also understand that this, you know, it's not about me or getting beyond ourselves to helping others, which is really our definition of leadership, influencing of others for purposes of some common good or achieved goal. If you can find purpose and meaning in your life and your work, we know that the wellness is part of that. And so there's this synergy that occurs between finding meaning and purpose through the work of influencing, making a difference in the lives of others, and your own sense of satisfaction, fulfillment, completeness, and wellness. So we think it's a very holistic approach to lawyering, and that's how we try to present it in the book, and then or trying to infuse it throughout our program at Baylor.
Well, it's one of the things that I really appreciated was that it added a wellness component to the holistic approach of the book, and the way that it's broken up, as you indicated, leadership of self, and then with others, and then in your community. Leaving a legacy. I think those are things that oftentimes students may think about when they come in, but they may lose sight of what that legacy should be, or they'd like it to be once they get out into practice. And of course, the integrity and ethics piece that is so fundamental and is woven in throughout the book. I wanted to ask, how have you seen changes? You noticed in 2012, 2013 that there weren't formal intentional leadership training programs and courses typically across the nation in law schools. How have you seen that change since you've been doing the work as far as leadership and its incorporation into legal education?
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the reasons that I began to focus on this concept of being more intentional about teaching leadership is, you know, forever, as you've said, I was 30 years associate dean with Brad and I working closely to do all things related to the law school and a lot of contact with our alums. And what we knew about Baylor lawyers is they are out there serving in leadership roles. And we would proudly say in a disproportionate percentage, we're the smallest law school in Texas. And yet when you look at the leadership roles that our lawyers have played in our profession and in their communities, goodness, it just seemed to be a disproportionate percentage. And so why was that? And so we began to sort of think about what makes Baylor Law different. And that's where I began to notice we have not been intentional about it. We didn't label it as leadership development, but yet some of these things that we have now more formalized really have always been at the heart of what we've tried to do at Baylor Law School. So that's one of the things that started us on this journey. And then beginning in, about 2017, when Deborah and I were really beginning to push this thing, it's just been amazing to me how fast this effort has grown and how embraced the idea has been. And not, I mean, Deborah Rohde leading any effort is just going to open doors for you without a doubt. But it was because I think legal education was hungry for it, recognized. So many professors across the nation recognized the need for this and just didn't have a way to express it or to reach out and try to figure it out. I'll confess, one of the earliest struggles that we've had is, what do you label this thing? Because we had several years worth of conversations about, is leadership really the right term? Because we are not about preparing law students to be the head of a managing partner of their firm or to a CEO of an organization. But as soon as you use the term leadership, there's this immediate assumption that we have some sort of formal, structural, organizational definition of leadership. So we're still trying to dispel that myth and to help people understand that lawyers, in every aspect of what they do in their profession, we are influencers. We are difference makers. And that's really what we're saying when we talk about leadership development for our students. It's not about a position. It is about a process of one person influencing others. And so seeing that that concept expand and grow in such a quick manner has been very heartening, but it also says we need it. It's important for our profession, and we're on the right track, and we just need to keep moving forward as fast and as furious as we can for the sake of our profession, but even more importantly, for the sake of our nation and of the world, because as you think about the important role that lawyers have played in the past, really important that we continue to find ways to add value and to make a difference, especially in light of the disruption that's going on in legal education. You know, we are, as a profession, we are no longer the keepers of the law. Clients don't have to come to us to get an answer, whether it's a right answer or a wrong answer. They can Google any legal question they have and find some answer. So we can't continue to rely upon our legal analysis, our legal knowledge as the sole purpose for value that we add to society. It is as that article, and in everything I write or anytime I speak, I go back to the white paper that Professors Heinemann, Lee, and Wilkins published in, I think it was 2014, where they said the traditional role of lawyers has been as legal technician. That's what law schools have focused almost exclusively on for much of our history. But we are also wise counselors and effective leaders. So, and that's very consistent with what all the reports, including the Carnegie Report and the three apprenticeships. It's not enough that we help our students learn to think like lawyers, the legal analysis part, but we need to help them with the practical skills so they can do lawyering tasks. A lot more emphasis in recent years on that. This leadership development and the professional identity efforts, they're focused on that third apprenticeship, which is how do we help our law students be lawyers, be professionals? How do we help them understand the important role that lawyers play in society? And how do we help them own those professional responsibilities and those opportunities that they will have to make a difference? So that's really where we are in this effort.
Well, it's exciting. And when you talk about how fast it's happened and how surprised you've been, you don't take the credit, but you should, that you and Deborah Rohde really got this thing going and your colleagues at Baylor have run with it, and we're all the better for it. One of the things that I talked to Professor Hamilton about, and you know that he is, like the godfather of professional formation at the Holleran Center at St. Thomas School of Law. When you are teaching your students in these courses and in the larger curriculum about professional formation, how do you define that for them?
We, at the same time, truly exactly the same time we created a leadership development program at Baylor, we also created a professional development program at Baylor. And that professional development program in its current, configuration, it is primarily a requirement for graduation of our students. They must complete 18 hours of professional development programming while they're in law school. We have some of those hours are required, but we modeled it after CLE. As lawyers, to maintain your license, you must, in Texas, complete 15 hours of programming per year. So we said, okay, we're going to have them do 18 hours over the course of 3 years. So we, what is now referred to as professional identity, professional formation, is a concept we, again, at Baylor have always understood. It is, and I'll cite back to that third apprenticeship from the Carnegie Report. It is about our obligation as lawyers to conduct ourselves with honor and integrity, but also to be part of the solution for society's problems. So that takes us beyond being a hired gun by clients into having independent relationships so that we can help, we can guide, we can be a problem solver, we can be a difference maker. We are not simply at the beck and call of individuals to do their bidding, but we are to step up and to be, in this sense, be a leader in society in terms of making a difference. So for us, the term we have been using at Baylor for a long time is professional development. So in my current writings, when I'm writing about this, Neil and I, he's just a dear friend, love that man, so respect and admire him for who he is, but also the incredible work that he's done. For all these years, we've had this conversation about, okay, how is leadership development and professional development, professional formation, professional identity, how do we distinguish those things? And so my most recent article that's about to be published at the Santa Clara Law Review as part of this year's leadership symposium, I tackled that topic and trying to distinguish, how do we define, so I've given sort of my thoughts, and certainly my thoughts will continue to develop as I have ongoing conversations with Neil and Jerry Organ and Lou Bilionis and all the others who are leading the professional identity formation movement, and then all of, and they're part of the leadership development as well. So it's interesting to sort of think about, you know, how that works. I think there was a tendency to think of leadership as a subset of professional identity, because in one sense it is. We as lawyers are leaders. We're identified as leaders. But in a different sense, and if you've looked at the work that, going back to the Holleran Center, they now have on their website, it's the Model for Milestones. Basically, it's this visual chart of helping our law students progress through law school to become an effective, engaged member of our profession. And at the other end, one of the goals is to help them move into leadership roles. So while leader is a part of the identity of our profession, it's also, in a sense, an opportunity that our training and our education and our license and position in society allows us. It allows us to be leaders in society. So in that sense, it's not a subset of our professional identity, but in some sense, it's a result. It's an opportunity that we have because of who we are. So anyway, I certainly invite people to help me, help all of us continue to wrestle with terms and definitions and structure for how we do this. But at Baylor, we're going to approach it from a two-prong approach. We do have a professional development program. I'm hoping we will grow it, enhance it, make it even larger and more pervasive than it currently is. But we'll also continue to have a separate leadership development program, which really focuses on beyond leadership of self to leadership of others to legacy and having an impact within a community or and within society.
Well, thank you. I look forward to reading your article because I think a lot of times when we're talking about these different terms, we may be coming at them with different definitions, which makes it harder to figure out which are the most effective methods, what the biggest result is or most impactful result will be for our students in our legal education programs. So I appreciate that. In the last few minutes we have, and I could talk to you about leadership forever, and it would be helpful to me, everything we talked about as this morning was, but can you just predict, if you will, what you think legal education is going to look like in the coming 5 years? I mean, we've been, as you mentioned, we've just concluded a period, or we're still in a period of disruption as a result of the pandemic. And there are other things that continue to disrupt legal education as we may have all experienced it, technology being a primary one. And as you indicated, the fact that in our profession, perhaps some of our technical expertise is not relied on as heavily. So what is your prediction for where we're going to be 5 years from now in legal education?
You know, goodness, 5 years is a very short window of time in our profession, both the legal profession and in the academy, because we're big battleships and we do not shift. We're not agile. We don't change course very easily. And there are understandable reasons for that when you look at who are in the seats of making decisions for both large law firms and law schools. So we have to rely upon innovators within both the profession and within the academy to move beyond their own personal history, experience, and background, and to come together to be motivated to look ahead at our profession. I've written, and then I sort of, you know, wince when I read what I've written, because I've made some very strong statements about the future of our profession if we don't change courses. I'm very concerned that we will become a service provider of technical skills that will be devalued in society, a commoditized profession and industry, rather than what we've been in the past, which is really movers and shakers and leaders. So I that's why I'm so passionate about this leadership development concept and so excited about the recognition that professional identity is an important component. I think we're probably all aware now of what the ABA is considering in terms of amendments to Standard 303 to make professional identity a labeled part of our programming. And I think that's critically important, because if not, I worry about the future of our profession. So I do think these are critical conversations we are having now in this next 5 years, so that the future of our profession is bright and good and noble as it has been in the past, to protect us as a profession, so that we can serve our historic role of being guardians of our democracy and protectors of individuals' rights and liberties and all that goes with the freedoms that we have in this country.
Well, thank you, Professor Teague. I think that's a fabulous place to wrap this up, and I hope we can continue the conversation, and good luck this year.
Absolutely. You too. And again, thank you so much for your work.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of EdUp Legal with your host, Patty Roberts. EdUp Legal is part of the EdUp Experience podcast network, bringing you the brightest and most influential minds across higher education and beyond. Here at EdUp, we make education your business.